Hey everyone, this is Coach Fab for Casinos USA Podcast, and welcome to our first podcast of 2021, our January 14th podcast. Oh my, I'll tell you, this is our 103rd podcast. Wow, we've been around a while. Okay, and you know, you hear our digital audience, they're always invited, and they're here in the studio, our beautiful basement studio in Western Pennsylvania. Hey, we have a good show for you today. We're first going to talk about
the hippie Lobo Wolf Lady. She's an actual person. I'm not kidding about that. Find her in Colorado.
Just outside of Golden, Colorado, which some of you know because of what's in Golden. Coors beer. That's where they make it. Oh, boy, what a tour that is. All right. And also, we're going to deal with, in the second part of our podcast, two questions about sports betting that I took from Anthony Curtis's Las Vegas Advisor. I'm a regular subscriber. I'm also a big believer in Anthony Curtis. When he talks about gambling, I listen. Check it out yourself. There's also a tremendous promotion coupon book you get when you join. You can get it hard copy as I do, and you can also get it online and save yourself a little bit of money. Anthony Curtis, C-U-R-T-I-S, the Las Vegas Advisor. Okay, with that being said, let's take a short break and turn our attention to the story of the Lobo Wolf Lady on the mountains of Colorado. Make that the hippie Lobo Wolf Lady. And the story starts where else? Right in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hi, this is Jane. Yes, this adventure did start in Las Vegas, in fact, at the Rio. That was a hotel, casino, resort that we liked to go to because it celebrated Mardi Gras. And there were, and not only Mardi Gras, but Rio de Janeiro, just like the real Rio. There were was in the Masquerade Village, was which was part of the casino, that area of the casino had tracks in the ceiling where these parade floats, like in the Mardi Gras, would go around the room. And then the women and men that were on there and dressed up in their satin Mardi Gras type clothes or costumes would throw Mardi Gras beads to the crowd. So, of course, it was very popular every evening when it went on. And I think it went twice, maybe once around 7 or 8 and then once around 11 or 12. So we like to go there because of the festive atmosphere, because there were even children allowed in those areas to catch the Mardi Gras beads, and the people on the floats would also throw them to them. And then a lot of people in costumes would walk around through the casino. There were shops all along that, around that casino there also, and you could stand there or wait there. And so a lot of the kids would wait there, and that's where they'd get their beads. And they had dancers that would roll these little platforms with steps, and they'd put them right beside a slot machine or a table. And then the music would come on, and then they'd dance right there and perform right in front of you. So the atmosphere was one that we hadn't seen in any of the other casinos, so we really did like it there. Okay, one of the other things we liked was the restaurant on top of the hotel on the roof, which was called the Voodoo Lounge. Really very nice restaurant, excellent food. It had a great outside venue also where you could sit there on the roof and great views. It was really a nice place to go up there. You had to have reservations to go to that restaurant. We also liked the fact they had a great pool complex there with five or six different pools. Some of them had sun, they all have sun obviously out there. They had sand around a couple of them. They had waterfalls, so you could stand under that. They even had one heated one, because one year we were there in February, and the coach and I and a gentleman and his three-year-old were the only four in that pool. The pool was warm, very cold when you got out. It was February, remember, but they did at then had a heated pool. We liked the location of the Rio, even though it was behind the Strip, you know, off of the Strip. But if you drove down Industrial Boulevard, which runs behind the Fashion Show Mall and Treasure Island, you could just go down Industrial and make a right on that little footbridge and turn right into the Rio. But you could walk from the Rio to the Gold Coast right across the street. And then from the Gold Coast out their front doors, you could go right across the street there and go to the Palms. So we would make an afternoon and go to three different casinos in that one day. And both the Gold Coast and the Rio had big shows inside. They had two shows going on. And so it was a nice place to go. There was always entertainment of some sort. And the Rio also had a large bowling alley. We were planning to leave the Rio to start our trip to Golden, Colorado in the morning, or at least around 11 o'clock. My cousin, who lives there, informed us that it wouldn't take us that long. You know, it would be a nice day trip, so that's what we were going to do. And then here at the Rio, the other thing I didn't mention that they did, they comped a lot, and they had contests and things going on every day. For instance, we got buzzers. You got a little buzzer when you checked in, and then it would go off if you won something. And we won show tickets and various comps, you know, free play. So don't you know that morning that we were going to leave, my buzzer went off, and I won two dinners of our choice at the Rio's steakhouse. So I thought, we can't keep these. And you know me, I don't like to give up a comp, not one that was that good. So we decided, so we'll leave later. You know, what's the big deal? We would have to eat anyhow. We'll just spend the day here. And we didn't have to be there till for 2 days. So we're giving ourselves a whole day to travel and then another day then that this wedding was taking place. So we did that. We stayed. I think we swam. We gambled. So it was well after, I want to say it was between 5 and 6 that we actually ended up leaving. We had an early dinner. Well, the steakhouse didn't even open, I don't think, till about 4. So we left that evening, and of course it's summer, so we know it's not going to even get dark till 9:30, 10 o'clock. You know, we'll be fine. You know, according to the map, it's pretty easy. We go on 15, then we hit 70, and we stay on that. Yeah, well, that wasn't taken into account, and we didn't know it. You know, we didn't, since we hadn't traveled this route before, you know, that we were going to the very highest parts of the Rockies, and that what was going to be encountered there. We found out that it's very dark. There's almost no access areas, which was really a fault on our part to not check that out, to have a map where it showed us what was available, you know, where there were stops, what there was. It was the one nice thing was there was a full moon that night, which kind of lit the way the whole time for us. But Fav was good enough to drive the whole time. And I kept, you know, I was looking for things, like the sign said, to watch for the large animals that could be around. And that means elk especially, which we almost ran into one once we got the Golden. But it was a little scary because at some elevations, when you look down, I said to him, this is like we're on a plane. You know, everything looks just exactly like you're looking out a plane window.
Yeah, Jeannie's so right. I mean, the map was just, you know, 15 north, and then you picked up, right in Utah, you picked up 70 east, and then you just started to climb. And truthfully, the roads were empty. Well, later on, we found out that one of the reasons the roads were so empty was there was a high wind warning. You know, so we're climbing, and there's not much traffic, and we're passing up 18-wheelers. You know, they're climbing in their lowest gears. And so, without realizing it, because we're from the eastern part of the country, and there's hills, but you wouldn't call them mountains like you would out west, not the Rockies. All of a sudden, instead of climbing, what are we doing, Janie?
Well, he's saying, you know, that truck's going to hit us. You know, we can't go any faster. And sure enough, I said, well, if that's happening to us, it's a lack of oxygen. If that's happening to us, it's going to happen to them too, and which it did. In fact, we saw several cars pulled over on the side. I don't know if they didn't take into consideration the lack of oxygen, that when you get up there that high, that I had read where that happened.
Well, the other aspect was, and it's pitch black, as Janie said, except for the moon, and you can't pull over anywhere, and you're going 60 miles an hour downhill. I'll never forget this sign. It said 9% grade for the next 34 miles. You know, so then you're thinking about your brakes failing, you're touching your brakes, you know, you're going 60, 65, and the wind's like rocking the van that we had, a Toyota van at the time, one of the older ones that era, and it was a little higher, you know. And then you'd see these lights in your window, and here'd be an 18-wheeler coming down 80 miles an hour. You know, you're thinking, God almighty, they can run over us. Oh, so we were getting closer to our destination, but finally, thank God, I mean, I'm so tense, and Janie realizes it, and I think she's tense too. But then she says, look what I see on the map.
Well, then I saw at Grand Junction, you know, there were a couple hotels, and there was a service plaza, and really, there was nothing prior to that from Las Vegas. So we decided we were just going to stay there for the night and go in the morning, where we could, you know, take advantage of a lot of the views that we weren't getting since it was so dark. We couldn't appreciate all the Rocky Mountain views from where we were.
Well, we had already 8-9 hours on the road, so it wasn't that much. We drove, it was 2 o'clock, at least 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Mm-hmm. I was gonna pull off at the side of the road and sleep, but she said, no, there's a hotel right there. So we went in and we slept till whatever.
Right. We stayed, and then we got up and we were able to have breakfast there, and then got our bearings, looked at the maps. Now, you remember, this is before GPS's. I mean, that would have really made the trip a lot more pleasant. Plus, we would have been able to see on the way, you know, where you could stop or whatever. There were a couple exits between Las Vegas and Grand Junction, but they didn't have anything right there at the exit, and we didn't know how far off you had to go. So that was in retrospect, I'm thinking, wow, you'd think at our age, as much as we'd travel, we would have taken that into consideration.
Well, I think one of the things that was working, we both had done so well at the Rio. I had one of my longest craps rolls. I won't go through it now, but I kept the dice for 45 minutes. You were winning, then you got the steak comp. I mean, we were such a good mood that I think it kind of blocked our rationale of thinking, you know.
Well, yeah, and then we were going to go to Colorado to where we had never been. Well, we were in Colorado then, in Grand Junction, but we were going to go to Golden. We were going to visit at my cousin's home in Cold Creek Canyon and to this family wedding. So it was going to be festive. We were going to see some relatives. You know, it was going to be fun, and it was.
So we're well rested, you know, the next day, because it wasn't that long of a drive from Grand Junction to Golden, if I remember, 2 hours or so. And we were at our destination. And so Janie picked a nice Spanish motif hotel. I can't remember the name of it.
Tabletop Mountain Hotel.
There you go.
Everywhere, if you looked, it wasn't Spanish motif per se. It was just
Southwestern motif. Yeah,
because the Tabletop Mountain, you looked right at it from our window, and then you could see also the Coors Brewing sign. That's the town where Coors Brewing is.
Yeah,
so
we took that tour.
First thing the next morning, we were there. I think at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that was fun. But the wedding reception was outside. If you climb. Again, we had to leave Golden.
Toward Boulder.
Yeah, and climb the mountain right there, you know. And these were not express roads. These were just back roads. And climb the mountain, and we enjoyed that a lot. And we got up to the house, and the house was actually built during Franklin Roosevelt's presidency, when he threw all that federal money into projects around the country on top of this mountain outside of Golden, Colorado. There was a dam built and a rather impressive lake. And close to the lake was our cousin, who had purchased the house, and he did it over in his fashion. The house was sort of, you know, the log cabin style, and it went good. It went back to the actual building of that dam, you know. So it was, in a sense, a historical place to live. But again, the The reception area was outside. You could look down onto the lake through the trees. And they had a local band there. And they had a number of neighbors and friends. And, you know, some of these people were our relatives. So we really had a fantastic time. It was one of the best receptions I ever had. I really enjoyed it underneath the stars and, you know, on the Rocky Mountains there. But here's the other thing. The neighbor next door had Lobo Wolves. And, you know, the title of our podcast, we refer to her as a hippie. And you know, we were young marriage doing the hippie movement in, you know, in San Francisco. And we know how people dressed, all right? And they had a lot of ideas that were appealing, you know, get back to nature, et cetera, you know, relax, calm down, you know, that kind of thing. So some of those people from that era never changed their appearance, never changed their dress. I mean, you know, the decades go by, they roll by, and this woman was, she was up there, and she was still dressing like, you know, she was at Haight-Ashbury, you know, with the Grateful Dead. But she had a double fence around her house. How high was that fence, Janie?
Oh, 6 feet.
6 feet at least, and she had, I'm going to say a quarter acre, maybe a little bit bigger than that, all fenced off, a couple of abandoned cars, but a nice looking, you know, home for the mountains. But she was a strange character, and she talked to us through the fence. And the reason she had two fences is if you put your hand through the first fence, it wouldn't go far enough that these Lobo Wolves could bite you. And I've come to learn that Lobo Wolves, they're a subspecies of the gray wolf. They're associated with the southwestern states. But here's the thing that's impressive. They can get up to 160, 170 pounds, and they can run 37 miles an hour, you know. And they were on top of her abandoned cars. They kind of used it as a house. They'd go back and forth. But they were scary. And they,
she was allowed to have, she was permitted to have these wolves at the time. And since then, that has changed. That whatever permits or whatever she had was revoked. And the wolves were taken away then to some other sanctuary, which I really made everybody else, you know, were relieved by that.
Well, I've never been that close to a wolf. And, you know, wolves, actually, there was a pack. And the thing I'm going to tell you about it is they just stare at you. And it's frightening, you know. It's truly frightening because they are not domesticated. They are not. They're wild animals. And, you know, how she even lived through it all and had them loose like that, going in and out of her house, in and out of the cars. I don't know, but we did learn later that the state agencies in Colorado closed her down and took the wolves back to wherever they belonged. So that was great. So, you know, we had a great time in Rio. We had a terrifying trip through the darkness of the Rocky Mountains and coming downhill for 34 straight miles. Just think about that. 34 miles downhill, you know. And then,
well, one of the nice things was we did the next day, and closer to Golden, we did get to have glimpses of the ski resorts of Telluride and Breckenridge. And it's just amazing just looking at those. There's no way I would ever ski there.
Yeah, I think they look more frightful in the summertime when you see how steep they are without the snow. But this goes back to our whole thing about how we bundle. You know, we weren't going to go just to the wedding. We had to go to Vegas first. We had to stay in a couple places, you know, and that's just what we do. And sometimes we get too carried away with just being happy, and we didn't really understand what we were getting into. And we decided we would have left. If we'd have left at 7 a.m. in the morning, we would have been at Golden and been tired and gone to bed and then enjoyed the day the next day before the wedding reception. But that's not what we do. So, hey, thanks for sharing this with me again, Janie.
Oh, anytime. I said I'd like to do that trip again to see the Rockies from Las Vegas to Grand Junction, what we missed that night, you know, that we couldn't see. As I said, thank goodness there was a full moon because it did light the area up, and you couldn't make anything out except if it, as I said, like it was below you and the lights were on in a little town or something.
Okay. All right. We're going to be right back, and we're going to talk about some sports bet questions that were answered by Anthony Curtis in the Las Vegas Advisor. Thanks again, Janie. We'll be right back after a short break.
Well, two questions that I couldn't answer without the help of Anthony Curtis is, number one, who invented point spreads for sports betting? Who invented point spreads for sports betting? And the second question, when did the first legal sports book open? Well, here's something I didn't know. In the early days of sports betting, if a gambler was betting on a game, it was just on a money line, whether one team would win or not. So you'd pick winners. It had nothing to do. There was no such thing as a point spread. And so if you want to use the term bookies, bookies limited who you could bet on. Because if there was a clear favorite, they wouldn't let you bet on that because you had the best chance of winning. So they just chose games that were more or less toss-ups. Now, what they did do is they called them parlay cards. You know, to make it more challenging, you might be able to pick a favorite if it was in a parlay, like a five-team parlay. You know, then four of the five were toss-ups. But boy, that was a problem. But somewhere in the 1940s, there was an ingenious concept called the point spread, and that changed sports betting forever. And it's a legendary kind of thing because it's not, you know, absolutely a fact. But supposedly a bookkeeper in Connecticut named Charles McNeil, he put the idea into use and it caught on everywhere. So that, you know, it was possible with a point spread to make a team that could win by 40 points a challenging bet because they had to win, you know, by 40 points, just like I said. It wasn't just about picking winners. So that's how that worked. And that really came pretty late. You know, so it wasn't until the 1940s that the whole idea of a point spread associated with betting on sports was used and was popular. And the second question about when was it legalized? It was legalized in Nevada in 1949, but these were not casinos. They were exclusively books, sports books, that you could go to and bet on games. And the majority of those legal sports books were associated with horse racing. However, that was changed. That was changed in a big way. In 1975, that's how late it was, Frank Lefty Rosenthal lobbied the Nevada legislature and got sports books in casinos to be legal. You know, so when that happened, those turf clubs, racetrack bets, you know, those kind of books just basically died off. And people started to use sports betting in casinos. And boy, sports books today, man, they're such a big issue. You know, most of the casinos built in the last 2 or 3 years, they have huge, huge screens where people could enjoy the sports book. Some of them are so impressive. It's simply amazing. Well, if you don't know this, I have to do it one more time. I don't like point spreads because they are toss-ups that way, too. So I like to bet on favorites, and I was 29-9. I just bet on three teams. I bet on the Pittsburgh Steelers on the money line every game. They went 12-5. I bet on Notre Dame. They went 10-2, losing only to Clemson the second time they played one another, and Alabama last season. And I also bet on the Nevada Wolfpack in Reno because my granddaughter goes there, and they went 7-2. So I was 29-9 on the money line bets that I made. Now, I'm going to use an example to help you appreciate the money line, just in case you're not familiar with it, if you're a point spread kind of person. If you bet on the money line and the team is a great favorite, let's just use the amount of $100. You might bet $100, and you might win $15. You know, some of the people that Alabama really ripped up, they averaged almost 50 points a game, and there were games they won scoring more than 50 points and holding the other team to a touchdown or less, and you know, they were big favorites. So your $100 bet might have paid $8.50. But if you would have bet the money line on the losing team, that $8.50 or that $15, whatever it was, would have paid $100. But remember, the losing team had to win in that story. There were times this year where the Pittsburgh Steelers were not favored. There were times this year when Notre Dame wasn't favored, like the first Clemson game when Lawrence was injured for Clemson and they went to Notre Dame and they lost in double overtime. You know, my $100 bet on Notre Dame paid a lot more because they weren't than $100 because they weren't favored to win that game.
And the same is true with the Nevada Wolf Pack. They went 7-2, and they weren't favored in many of their games. So I just enjoyed picking winners, but picking point spreads, that takes some analytics in terms of study. It's not so obvious, and I just felt better picking winners and doing it the old money line way. All right, that's what I did. You know, and finally, I just want to remind you that the Las Vegas Advisor, I have no business ties with Anthony Curtis, never met him. But if there was one newsletter about Las Vegas that I think is worth the money, it's Anthony Curtis's Las Vegas Advisor. And again, the promo book that you get with that, a coupon book, is just simply amazing. I mean, you get 3 or 4 times of what you paid to, you know, join. So check it out yourself. You can get it online. You can get it mailed to you directly, whatever, you know. So I just think it's something that keeps, you know, casinos on your mind and keeps you up to date with what's going on in Vegas. That's not associated with a podcast or a YouTube video. You know, it's just the old-fashioned way in print for someone who enjoys this recreational gambling scene to enjoy. So, wow. The hippie lady with the Lobo Wolves, that was a very factual story. And boy, it was frightening. You know, when we got to when we got close to the crest of the Rocky Mountains on that highway, like Janie said, you know, the cars were slowing down, someone were pulling over, and you thought a truck coming behind you was going to crash into you, then suddenly they slowed down. And then when you got over that crest and you see a sign, 9% grade, next 34 miles, just the opposite happened. You start picking up speed, you know, and you're touching your brakes, and, you know, the wind is rocking the van, and then you have an 18-wheeler come blowing by you, and, of course, they're shooting wind at you, and, oh, boy. By the time we got down to the junction, man, Grand Junction, wow, it was time for me to get some rest. Oh, wow. So it was still a great memory, and it's still a great memory to talk about. Okay, well, today is our first podcast in 2021. We hope you stay with us all year long. The casinos will continue to open and flourish as people get vaccinated across the country, and it won't be long till we're all back together in our favorite casinos. So until then, remember, Casinos USA is still a place where every day is Saturday. See you in a couple weeks. Thanks for listening.